Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
Some of the episodes that we do are interesting, you know, the life stories, people's business experience, but some just hit you on a different emotional level, don't they?
Yeah, and I think the great one with Christina is that she's sort of been there, done it, experienced it, and come out the other side. And come out the other side positively, but experienced not so much positively and negatively, which is a good lesson for people learning. Maybe lesson's not the right word.
But I get what you mean. And I think what's really powerful is what I hope happens is that some people perhaps that aren't in the best of places and might be struggling to a greater or lesser extent might take messages from that and just kind of reassess where they're at and whether they're happy and whether they need to have a chat to somebody. Yeah. Because she's been through burnout a couple of times, resulted in her selling her practice and then moving into a new world. But I think as people listen to that episode, they might pick up elements of what she says and perhaps a bit of self-reflection.
Yeah, and hopefully someone will go, ooh, and then think a bit more about it as opposed to, I'm fine.
Yeah, no, wonderful episode. Really, really good one. We like to bring an eclectic feel and an international flavour to the podcast from time to time,
don't
we? We
do. International cultural unification, I think, is what we're aiming for.
Yeah, well, I think now we're kind of spanning lots of countries in one go.
Yeah, we're doing a European tour in one person.
It is. So today we're very fortunate. We have Dr. Christina Radix joining us today. Christina's a dentist based in Spain, former practice owner, transformational coach for dentists, and a DJ.
That is not just an eclectic mix of countries, but job titles.
It is. Welcome, Christina. How are you doing?
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. It's lovely to see you again.
Yeah. Well, we met, didn't we? Because you were invited by Rabiha. You came over for the Global Dental Collective. We're doing a Dentorama event. Mm. And we met before that and we had a chat, which was lovely.
And we avoided Shisha.
Yeah.
We did. It was a good event, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great. It's really needed amongst the dentists and in the dental community. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and credit to you for coming all the way.
Because
you
literally.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, but you came over from Spain just for that event as well, didn't you?
Yeah. And I'm happy I did it. It's wonderful.
Good. Before we start and get into your dental career and your practice ownership and how you help dentists now, you've got a very eclectic background. Can you share with us kind of your background and your upbringing and then we'll kind of get onto the dental bit because it is fascinating.
Yes, I will. I was born in Malmö, south of Sweden. And my mother is from Greece, my father from Hungary. So I grew up in this, I know, today, a lot of people are like me when we're mixed and we live in another country, and it makes you feel you don't really belong to, you belong to everything or nothing. You know, you're in a middle kind of land. Mm. But I always saw it exotic. I saw it in a positive way because I also know several languages, so I can understand a lot of people. And sometimes I'm in situations that I'm like, oh, don't speak about me because you don't know that I will understand you, you know. And languages, it's powerful to know languages. So, So that is how
I grew up. It's quite good as well, really. Because if you have any inkling of sport, you've got your foot in about four camps.
Yes.
Haven't you? That happens
Sweden,
a lot.
Spain.
Yeah,
it's quite handy, really. As English, we've got like England. Yeah. That's about it, really. But you know, you've got a lot of chance. Actually, today I am Hungarian because we're doing really well.
Yeah. So,
exactly.
Christina,
you
with a bit,
the best of everything.
So with a Greek mother, a Hungarian father, you were brought up in Sweden and you live in Spain. Where feels home to you?
How many passports do you have?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a Swedish passport. I feel now Spain feels like home because I've lived there for 18 years. So it's like, almost half my adult life. So now Spain feels home. But it's true that you feel like pieces of everything. I feel Swedish. At the same time, if you're like, you grew up with a Greek mother who shouts and speaks like this, you understand that part as well. And then my father is very like calm. He's like Mr. Bean kind of type. So when you grow up, when you grow up seeing all these things, you can understand a lot of people as well. So I think that's one of my strengths, that I understand different cultures and why people are in different ways, because I've seen different people around me all the time.
Does that mean that you adapt to different situations quickly and settle down quickly?
Yeah.
Lots of people it takes them quite a while to get comfortable in their environment, but because you've got so many elements, do you settle in very quickly to where you are?
Yeah, very quickly. I feel that I can speak with any person. I don't have and be in any situation but I have noticed that I feel best when I'm with people who are real, who are not like faking or trying to be something else. But I feel in those situations, I can feel uncomfortable. But then it doesn't matter if it's how the place is, or how the person is from where they are. I can adapt very easily. But that's a bad side as well, and that we will come to later.
Yes. So you qualified as a dentist back in Sweden. What was the dental school experience like there? We quite often ask dentists, but the majority of the dentists we talk to qualified in the UK. So their experience, whilst unique to them, there's a kind of pattern in terms of what it looks like. But what was dental school like for you? Because in the UK, one of the things we hear quite a lot now is that the hands-on experience seems to be reducing as the years roll on. Did you get lots of hands-on experience when you were learning?
Yeah, a lot. We the first year was the first year was without patients, but then we started having our own patients from the second year until we stopped the fifth year. So I felt very comfortable with the practical skills.
That's good.
And another thing that we had that was really cool that they just started is that we had problem-based learning. So each week we were working in smaller groups of 8 students, and we got a problem. Like, for example, a woman comes to your clinic with a pain. What could it be? And then we had to search for possible explanations, answers. So they didn't give us just the answers. We had to search, we had to think, we had to be in the team, speaking, discussing. And I think that's a really good way of learning.
Very good indeed. So how long did you practice dentistry for in Sweden before you went to Spain?
I studied for 5 years, and the fifth year we were working outside the school and worked at the dental clinic as well. So we saw how it was to work in the real life.
Right.
And then, so that clinic wanted me to continue working there. But I already knew that I wanted to try to live in a warmer country. I felt like I think that is also because every summer I was in Greece with my grandmother in a village.
Right.
I loved that.
Right.
So I remember feeling that I want at least to try how it is to live in another warmer country or with more light, because I felt how it affected me. So I went pretty fast after getting my certification. And I went to there are a lot of Scandinavian there. So it's almost like little Sweden, Norway there. Yeah. There are a lot of Scandinavian clinics. So I found one Swedish clinic there that I started to work at.
So that was your motivation. Your motivation to go to Spain was sunshine.
It was heat.
Yeah. Yeah. To not live only. Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to, enjoy more light.
It's brilliantly simple.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Other people come up with some maybe convoluted reason how they got to somewhere, and basically you wanted a bit of warmth.
Yeah. But yeah. I think it shows a real self-awareness on your part, because, you know, we know the impact on daylight that daylight has on us as a species. Yeah. And, you know, particularly in Scandinavian countries, particularly in the north, you know, there are social and health issues related to the fact that it's dark so much of the time. So for you to have that awareness quite young, to be like, I need to get somewhere that's warmer and there is longer periods of daylight, is quite smart.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're going to come on to kind of the well-being side of things. And yes. Yes, but obviously there was another element that affected you.
Yeah, exactly.
So talk us through. So you land in Spain. You've got the sunshine. Everything's going well. At this time, you're working as a dentist in somebody else's practice, or did you buy a practice quite quickly?
Somebody else's practice. And right. he was in a situation that he wanted to start to work less. So I was working a lot. And I am a little bit like that in my personality, that I give 100% and not only 100, 200. Like, so I have the emergency mobile. I answered everyone. I went to the clinic Saturdays or Sundays if it was needed. I didn't have any boundaries. I wanted to grow up this patient stock.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a lot of, I made like articles in the newspapers there. I tried to get known as much as possible. So I worked a lot, but of course I started from zero. So I started almost without any patients. So I had to build that up.
Sure. And was that the practice you went on to buy, or did you buy a practice somewhere else?
Exactly. So after 6 years, after 6 years, I became an associate. And then after another 7 years, I became the only owner. So I was at the same clinic for 18 years. So,
wow.
Yeah.
It's a long time. That's a long time. And,
that doesn't happen so many times. Mm.
No, not at all. Not at all. Quite often people do bounce around, or they go and buy a practice that they've had no previous involvement in. They just turn up and they're the owner. You've talked very openly about kind of the impact that had on your well-being in terms of owning a practice and all that comes with that. And you had some kind of periods of burnout through that period. What was the build up to that? How did that kind of manifest itself with you? Was there a long run up for that to happen, or was it something that kind of hit you quite quickly?
Yeah, the thing is that it hit me after 10 years. And the thing is that we don't notice when the burnout is building up. That is why it's so important that we know the signs, because there are these subtle signs in the change of the personality that we have to be more aware of. Because when it hits pretty hard that you cannot just continue. And that happened to me after 10 years. But I don't know exactly when the burnout signs happened, because they appear earlier. I'm not sure when it appeared. But the question was how it started.
It was whether you were aware. I mean, I think you probably answered it in terms of it sounds to me like
it's the frog in the frying pan.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's kind of the boiling frog, isn't it? It kind of just gets hotter and hotter. And then something happens that kind of
is many just times
overbearing.
It
it's overwhelming.
Exactly. Many times it happens also when other things happen, because we have a private life as well. I had a husband, 3 children. So you have this private life going on at the same time as you have your own dental clinic. So it just gets too much. The thing is, as you said, that I was good at self-awareness. I didn't have any self-awareness. I didn't listen to my own feelings. I didn't put any boundaries. I wanted to please everyone, and that's not sustainable.
So you said about your family. Did you notice the signs of burnout yourself, or was it your family? Did somebody draw attention to the fact that you were perhaps struggling in some way?
That summer, this happened November, but during the summer, I started to cry easily. We were doing a big job in our home as well, so it was chaotic at home. And I remember when I went to buy things for the home for that renovation, I remember I could just stop the car and cry. So I realized that was signs that something was going on. But then it was not until one day in November when I came to work and I saw in the agenda that a patient still had pain after doing it. Root canal treatment, which is real pretty normal for a dentist. But that was just like, I just started to cry. It felt like you get those feelings that I'm not good at anything. I cannot accomplish anything. That is the bad side of burnout that can lead to depression, that you feel like, doesn't matter what, nothing turns out well. So I started to cry, and the other dentist just said, Christina, you have to go home. You have to go home and stay there for a while. And did
this come as a shock to your family? Were they as surprised as you that it had hit you this hard?
I have had a very understanding husband by my side all the time. We have known each other since we were six. So he knows that I go all in. Yeah. He knows that I'm always exaggerating with things, or, you know, he's always saying, you're working too much. And I'm like, no, I'm not. So I think for him, it was just like, okay, this was supposed to happen. Like, but I'm never listening to him, you know, or to anyone. But now I've learned. So, I don't know. I don't know if it came as a surprise, but he has always been there, like just supporting and just try to take it easy now, Christina, and don't overdo things.
Yeah.
What did you do? Because it's very easy for people to say, take it easy.
But
it's like a platitude. What does it look like? Yeah.
Yeah. So what I did, the thing is that I felt so detached from myself, and I was like, what is going on? I got afraid. What is going on with me? I want to know, why am I not happy when I have everything I wanted? So I went to a doctor and said, could you help me find somebody, a psychologist or something that I could speak with? And he just wanted to hand me out some medicine, like antidepressive or something. And I was like, no, I don't want medicine. I know that there are cases where it's needed. I want to speak with somebody. And finally, I found a psychologist, and she heard that I had no boundaries at all. And she said, now you have to concentrate just doing things that makes you happy. Just take these small steps, go to the sea, watch the sea, be with the nature. Is that we forget how to be mindful. We forget how to just stay, because we're running in this hamster wheel. And day by day, we get detached from ourselves. And so it helped me. I stayed at home for a month. And I thought I knew the answers now and I could continue. But it would take another 7 years.
And you were owning the practice at this time.
At the first time I was associate. We were two that was owning the clinic. And but the second time I was the only owner. Partner, yes.
Yeah, checking.
Yeah,
for the UK
guys. It's not
guys.
The same as...
It's a partner. Yeah, just checking.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so we would refer to... So an associate in the UK would be a self-employed dentist working for the owner. Which we would say the principal. An associate, which is in a partnership, and then you became the sole owner.
Yeah.
So you for the UK, that would be a principal. Yeah, but in both scenarios, you were an owner
first. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then I was associate first, then a partner, and then a the only owner.
That's it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And was it this second period of burnout that led to you selling the dental practice? Was that kind of the thing that you said, this is a contributing factor to my kind of repeating behavior, my well-being, therefore I need to kind of move on from owning a practice?
Yes, exactly. Because the first burnout, the signs were I couldn't sleep properly. I was sad. And I couldn't concentrate as well as before. And the feeling of being detached and sad. The second burnout was much, much more physical. I could not sleep even for 1 hour until my body woke me up with these panic attacks, with like tachycardia, high blood pressure. Like if a lion was running after me, that feeling. And I got really scared. I felt like I don't want to get a stroke or die. I'm too young for this to happen. Mm. And another thing, it was that I started to feel like I didn't want to hear about dentistry. I could just see the word dentist and I was like, I didn't want to see it in the field. Mm. Like it was something that gave me bad association.
Right.
So on the first time you recognized you had burnout and learnt some skills to try and help you, which obviously you did. So did you then forget about those, or did you think that you were sorted and didn't need to worry about those skills, and therefore effectively when it happened, you know, your second burnout, it was all a bit of a surprise to you because you'd sort of come through one? Just intrigued.
Yeah, good question there. I think I forgot, but still after the first burnout was when I realized that I loved music. I've always been loving music. So I brought up that passion again and became the DJ. I was always training at the gym in the morning. So I did do these self-care things as well. And I thought it was enough. I thought I was doing enough self-care and being enough self-awareness, but it's much more than that, because it's about setting boundaries. It's about leadership. I will come to that, what my advice is if somebody wants to buy a clinic, because it's so much more. It's not just going to the gym and that is enough. It's you have to get the right skills to be able to be happy as a dental clinic owner.
This kind of reoccurred and was the second moment, was that kind of the trigger where you felt that owning the practice was such a significant contributor to your all-round health? The practice had to go to effectively protect yourself as an individual.
Yeah, I remember I was standing with my dogs and it was such a beautiful moment, because I was standing with my dogs. I was seeing this beautiful sunrise in November. It's really beautiful. It's these reddish, yellowish colors. And I was really starting to get depressed. It was not sadness anymore. I felt like if I'm going to continue like this, I don't want to live. And it scared me getting these feelings. And the same feeling. Why does this happen to me when I have everything I want? I have this beautiful family. I have this caring husband. I have a clinic that I wanted. So I don't know where, but I got this strength that, Christina, push the pause button in your life. So I called my mother. And I said, Mom, I think I just have to come to your place to just, I felt like this small little bird, you know, or a small little baby, just take care of me, you know, and
was anybody supporting you?
Leave all,
Through this period, Christine, did you have a therapist or anyone supporting you through this, or were you just kind of trying to navigate it yourself?
Navigating it myself, yeah. So I was, and I think I didn't have any self-awareness. I asked my husband, did you know that I was suffering so much? And he said, no, actually I didn't.
And are you still married?
Yes.
to the same husband.
I think that says an awful lot about us as humans, that we're particularly good at hiding things in terms of how we really feel and what's affecting us. Because he's obviously known you since
from
you were
her
six.
Husband, yeah.
You know, you live together, he's your husband, you share a house, yet he didn't know that it was affecting you to the extent it is. And I think that's one of the big dangers of life generally, isn't it? That you ever really know somebody to the extent where you kind of can help them? Because this sounds like a really tough time
for
you.
And hats off to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I was hiding it from myself. You know, I still went to work. I still continued.
Yeah.
And as normal until I saw that even... It was so strange because I started to see that when people saw me, I looked tired or as I was having a burnout, because I could see pity in their, it's difficult to explain, but I could see pity in their way of seeing me. But I was still, because normally I'm very happy, I'm very energetic. So
I but think perhaps you were pretending. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so because I couldn't see that there was another way.
Yeah.
I thought I would die with that clinic.
Oh, wow. So you hit your self-imposed pause button and you went to Greece. How long did you go to Greece for? And did that turn things around for you?
Oh, yeah. I went to Greece and I went with a plan. So on the airport, I bought this small notebook. So I started to journaling, like writing down my feelings.
Good.
And I said to myself, even if I don't have the energy, I want to go to the sea and walk by the sea every day to be with nature. And you almost get a little bit spiritual when you're in situations like that, because it's like you just like, give me an answer, you know? Help me, somebody help me, giving me the answers why I'm not happy. And so I realized there that I cannot have a clinic anymore. I'm not happy having a clinic. It's not me. I've been fooling myself. I don't like to say to people what they should do. And if you don't like that, you should not be a dental clinic owner. You know what I mean? Because I think many times that when you're a dentist, you feel like I want to do it my way. And that's why I'm having my dental clinic. But it's not just as easy as that. You have a whole ship that you have to drive.
It just goes to show, doesn't it, that what looks from the outside, as you were saying, you have a perfect life, lovely husband, business, three children, everything's great. But actually inwardly, you're falling apart. And I think it's a great lesson for anyone listening that actually it is okay to reach out rather than just keeping up for appearances. Very British thing, isn't it?
But also, Christina, you were saying about, you know, not having the self-awareness, but it all came through, didn't it? Because then you then had the self-awareness to recognize that perhaps only a dental practice wasn't for you, and that was having a negative impact on you and your life and the people around you. So you made what many would have said was a brave decision to sell your dental practice.
And it's like ripple in the waters. Do you say that? Ripple in the waters. When you start to get self-aware, when you start to see the truth, it just, you cannot fool yourself anymore. So you realize more and more things. Okay, do I want to do this or do I want something else? I wanted to become a psychologist before I became a dentist. do I even want to work full time? You know, your whole life changes. Is when you start to get self-aware, really true to yourself, you get, it's an inner happiness that no money can give you. It's like, I'm so happy now when I have learned, but it has been a whole, and I will give some advice, what helped me as well.
Yeah. And did these liberating thoughts come when you were over in Greece? Was it the separation from the world that you felt kind of tied to by going to Greece? Did that give you the headspace to kind of work out what you wanted? Yeah. So when you then went back to Spain, everything felt better.
Exactly. So when you have a burnout, if somebody's listening that have recognized the symptoms, the important thing is to zoom out, to step back and relax, because then everything will start to fall in place. You cannot see things while you're stressed and while you're in it. So what happened was I went to Greece, I was journaling, I was walking in nature, and I was reading. And that is when I found a book from a psychiatrist, Tim Cantifer. It's called Depressive Illness, The Curse of the Strong. Because we have this perception that depression and mental illness is about being weak. Mm-hmm. But the only people who get burnout and depressed are the ones who don't stop when something gets tough. They feel that they are valued through what people think about them. They have very high work moral, so even if they are tired, they continue. That's when this detachment happens. The people who have boundaries and say, no, I'm not going to work later than 5 o'clock, because 5 o'clock I'm going home to be with my family, for example, a thing like that. People have who have these boundaries and no, I'm not going to do that, but I don't like, because I don't like it, I like this instead. Those are not the people who will so easily get burnout or depression, because they know what they want and what they don't want.
So they set their own boundaries.
Exactly.
So in terms of tips for people, I was going to say, Christine, so in terms of people who may be susceptible or feel that they're kind of heading towards a burnout scenario, do you think that setting boundaries is critical? It's really important.
It is critical. But the thing is that for a person like me and somebody who feels like, wow, I'm the same, I recognize myself in Christina, it's not so easy to set these boundaries. If it was easy, we would do it, but we can't see those boundaries. And one thing that happened to me was that I got a coach and a therapist. So I realize now why these things happen. It has to do a lot with your childhood. Every parent tries to do their best. So it's not by criticizing your parents, but if you were not really allowed to set boundaries, I don't want that. If you had to adapt, you will probably adapt as an adult. And it helped me a lot to realize that. Yeah, it helped me a lot to realize that, okay, the old Christina was like that, or the Christina at the clinic was that like that because she didn't know better, but I know better today. I set boundaries today. But because you can change, but I had this old pattern of just adapting because that was what I was used to.
Because of the boundaries thing is, I mean, life is happier in one sense in that you now won't allow yourself or hopefully not create another scenario which leads to burnout. But do you think it's a happier life, being able to set boundaries, compared to the life you had before where you just did everything for everybody whenever they wanted it?
Much happier. It's a life changer. It's life changing. And I'm not saying I will always be this emotional Christina. I want to see people happy. That's a big force for me, to see people happy. But I have learned how to listen to myself, how to find these small feelings and decide if it's good for me or not. I saw this TED talk a few days ago, like one advice of being a resilient person. And being a resilient person is also like being a happy person, being a person with boundaries, is to think, will this thing help me or will it not? By asking yourself that question. Like, for example, when you ask, do you want to be on the podcast? Is this something that I feel is good? Or if it would be giving me a feeling of not doing this, then I wouldn't do it. So,
feeling of dread.
But the thing is that, but sometimes it's so difficult for persons who are easily adapting to everyone to know when to say no or yes.
Did you, with your children, did you set boundaries with them?
Very good question, because I was the same with them. So I was this lame person with everyone. Like my husband says, the only one you can set boundaries with is with me. And yeah, my coach said, yeah, that's because you feel so secure with your husband. So you can, like I said, we have known each other since we were in first class, since we were six and seven. So it's true. So I was the same with my children. I couldn't set boundaries with them. So it was my personality.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, so I'm just intrigued as whether you had that thing where you didn't do boundaries yourself, but you had them for your children.
Right.
But therefore then you didn't recognise the boundaries in yourself. But obviously the answer is you didn't.
Yeah. Christina, I have a notion that there's a thing called owner fatigue, and it's the dental practice owners, after about 9 or 10 years, they can't quite pinpoint what it is. But it's just owner fatigue. They just get fed up and worn down by all of the things of that go with owning and running a practice. Having been through your own experience, is there insights that you could have and pass on to practice owners as to when they should start thinking about selling a dental practice?
I read an article that when you start to have a burnout, your revenue can reduce 60%. So, and that will just give more
stress.
How do you say fuels and stress to what you're already experiencing. So, and the difficult thing is that you don't realize when you start to get the burnout. Maybe your partner realizes it. I was speaking to a dentist who said that his wife said to him, sell the clinic, you're having a burnout. But he didn't realize it until 1 year after she said it. So,
wow.
But so if somebody's going through a burnout or going through a hard time owning a clinic, I would really say to get a coach, get a mentor, because that will be a person who's there seeing things from another angle, being there supporting you, seeing things that you're not seeing. Because that is something, I don't know if it's only dentists, because we see ourselves as these superpower. We know the best. We can do everything. I don't know where that comes from. But when you're having a coach, that coach will always take you one step further and see things that you don't see. For example, why do you do that task? Why don't you delegate that task? Why don't you cut that and you invest in that? That will give you more money or more time. So if I would have a mentor or a coach from the start, maybe it wouldn't happen. So having a coach, but first of all, before having a dental clinic, go on a course, get educated on how to handle a clinic. Because that is also, I thought, I'm a good dentist. I'm a good dentist. I'm a hard worker, but it's not enough. It's no, not, enough, not enough, but I think I was very naive, and maybe other people are not so naive, but I really thought that that was enough. I'm a hard worker, but it's not.
Yeah, no, we're big advocates of that as well.
Yeah. So you have to know it's a business. In the end, it's a business. That is another thing. Some people have a business mind, but for me, I didn't become a dentist because of the money. For me, it was making an impact, working with people. I always knew that I wanted to be and work with people. So that was my force. But and also the dental school, it doesn't prepare us thinking in a business, with a business mind. So when we get to clinic and we don't have an education.
Sweden. And so as a result of you selling your practice, you now support dentists in this way, the things you've just been talking about in terms of coaching people, supporting people. But I think what gives you a unique insight is, one, you're a dentist and you're supporting dentists, but you've been through this process yourself. So you know what it looks like, you know what it feels like. It's not sympathy, it's empathy.
Yeah, exactly. I've been through it all, and I went to the coaching course to get certificated, and that helped me a lot, because coaching is about asking the right question, because we believe that every person has the answer, their own answer inside them, because we are all so different. So that is the powerful thing with coaching, that you will find your best answers.
I think part of the problem with coaching, it's a bit like when we spoke to Sharon about hypnotism in dentistry, is coach has a bit of a bad rep, because people assume it's going to be someone going, "Who are you? Yeah, you could do this." Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's almost like the American Tony Robbins sort of thing. People go, "I don't want to do that," but it's not that.
Yeah. No. No, it's not that. And but well, it is that as well, because we have so much, you know, everything is a mindset. Everything is about, you can come so much further if you actually believe and see yourself being there. But the thing is also, with as a dental clinic owner, you're just solving all these problems. So you're not actually looking ahead, because you're a problem solver.
Yes.
And that's why you also have these decision fatigues, because it's like you're walking there, you know, when the mud is just going under you, and just like stopping, how do you say, in Sweden we say you're just
quicksand, where
you're not going anywhere.
No, and that's the thing, because you don't have time, you don't have the energy to go forward. But if you delegate, if you can handle the clinic in a more efficient way and delegate the things that takes time from you that you don't like to do more of the things that you do like, have a coach, then you can go forward.
And DJ.
I was going to say, and one of the things that you enjoy is being a DJ, isn't it? And whilst I'm sure it's great fun for somebody who's not particularly musical, or of people that can create things like that.
And you probably don't do Wicker Wicker also.
No. But I imagine that creatively, it must be nice to have that as another dimension to your life as well, something that's very different.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's... I have always had this creative side, and I think many dentists have it. But I don't know why, definitely. Like music felt like it was almost like a sin. Like, I cannot do music if I'm doing dentistry. I don't know. It was like a limited belief in me. But I think the older you get, the more you don't care about what people think.
No, I think
so
you're right.
And you're like, I will not live forever. If I want to try that, I will try it. So I just tried it and I loved it. My first DJ set looks like at different places, like nightclubs or beach clubs.
It's really quite
and
cool.
And it's something I see, yeah. And I just recorded a set that I just put on YouTube just for the fun of it. So I'm really enjoying it. I'm really in my flow. And that is a very important thing as well for well-being, is to try to be in your state of flow as much as possible. And that is also something that leads to burnout. When you're not in the state of flow, you're just in the state of solving problems.
Yes. And you're also working on an event with Rabiha, aren't you, in terms of you've got a dental retreat coming up next year as well.
Yeah. That will be fantastic. So
tell us about that. Who's that? Who's that
working
for?
Working on that too. That is for professionals or persons who just want to. It could be that they are through a burnout or have been through a difficult situation, but it doesn't have to be. It's just when you need a change, when you need to like get connected with yourself, with nature, and for people who just need this change in their life, that something is missing and you feel detached from yourself.
Well, I think back to your situation, you know, you took time away from Spain and went to Greece, and it was, for you, it was transformational.
Yeah.
So I guess if people then go to a retreat, which will be for a few days, but it puts them into a different space, it might just give them that opportunity to see things slightly differently and you
different
know, change something in their life. And you've got a lot going on because you've got a book coming out soon as well, haven't you? What's your book about?
Yeah. My book is about my story, where I'm writing, I am telling all this that has happened to me and my what helped me come out of it. And so it's like a little bit like a biography, but also about how to get through a burnout and become a better person. Not a better person, more finding your true self.
Right. Yeah.
Because the thing is that you're losing yourself. Mm. Now I find that I have found myself again.
Mm. That's great. I was going to say that's lovely to hear as well, because it must feel very uncomfortable if you don't feel comfortable as yourself.
And also, in the book, you're going to have to make yourself vulnerable, aren't you?
Yeah, very.
Because you can't just tell all the great bits. You've got to tell the crap bits as well.
Mm.
Exactly. And I don't mind. It was difficult in the beginning, but once I started to tell this over and over again, now it feels like I have no limits, and it feels such a freedom, because I know that I'm helping people as well. And I couldn't say these things if I was still a dental clinic owner, maybe. Because we are so afraid that somebody will know it. That is the thing. And that's why the title of the book is "But Please Don't Tell Anyone," because that is what the dentist says to another dentist when he or she tells about a difficult time. I had a burnout. I had these symptoms, but please don't tell anyone, because you don't want patients to know it.
Yeah. I think what's great, Christine, is you've had a hard time, but how uplifting to use your experience, you know, through your coaching, your book, or whatever it might be, to help other people perhaps spot the signs a bit earlier than you did, so they don't have to go through all that you've gone through, and they can readjust their life and manage it in a different way.
Yeah, definitely.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's a great story, Christine. It really is. It really is. We always wrap up.
I will tell you one more.
Go on.
I will just tell you one story quickly. Sorry.
When
I came to Greece, and I went on these daily walks by the beach. One afternoon, there were this beautiful cloud in the sky. And I was just like, wow, this sunset is amazing. And I filmed and I took some photos. And I walked a few steps. And suddenly I saw this big starfish in the sand. Nothing else, just this starfish that had died. It was dead. And I, in that moment, I took it and I just felt a strong sensation that something good will come out of what I have been through. I went home to my mother's. I Googled what it stands for. It stands for renewal, because you know, a starfish can lose an arm and a new one grows out. And I looked at my mother and I said to her, I know that something good will come out of this. And that is what I feel now. Every day dentists are reaching out to me like, thank you so much. You're using the voice we can't use. Because when you're in it, when you're in a clinic, you have your dental clinic, you have responsibility of patients towards a boss, you cannot speak openly about it. And that makes it just bigger. You feel alone. You feel weird because you don't know if anyone else feels like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is so dangerous. It's dangerous to feel alone in those situations. So that's why I really just that's why I'm always writing in my post, you can reach out to me. I want to give that safe space and for the rest of my life to and I know this happens to every profession. It's not about dentists, but I'm reaching out very like specially to dentists, because dentists often don't feel like victims.
I think in the UK, Christina, I think dentistry is hit hard. I think in the UK, I don't know if this is a global stat, but in the UK, the suicide rate within dentistry is one of the highest professions. And I think general mental and well-being, and I think this all kind of goes into the melting pot. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if those kind of low-level feelings of burnout build and manifest themselves in different ways. So if people can recognise the signs earlier and take some action or talk to somebody or not feel so isolated, that's a great thing. And if as a result of us chatting today, just one person kind of talks to a mate or picks up the phone or sends a message, you know, we've done a great thing.
Exactly. That's what's keeping me going with this. And I know I'm helping a lot of people just speaking about this. Thing is that what makes dentistry so special also is that we have to perform the whole time. And we cannot say, I would just grab a coffee. I would just go for a walk. No, we are there at the chair. We have to perform all the time. And we have to be entrepreneur, psychologist, business person, dentist at the same time. Yeah. And very few professions have that. And that makes our profession so vulnerable. But we have to find globally ways and strategies how to help dentists and make it better for dentists. Yes. Maybe we should only work 6 hours a day, you know? Think in a new way.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Christine, it's been wonderful. Thank you for your time. It's absolutely fabulous. We always finish up in the same way. So we've got two questions for you before we're going to leave you to go and enjoy your rest of your day. So the first question is, if you could be a fly on a wall somewhere, when would that be and who'd be there?
Yeah. So this is like a continuing answer of what I spoke about for a few seconds about think in a new way. I would be a fly in a room where James Cameron, the director, who made Titanic and Avatar, because I would like to see how these people can think out of the box and get all this inspiration. Because if we could get that, we could find solutions that we are not seeing now.
Yeah.
Example for the dental professions, for dentists and for other people in the world, because he's really seeing things and doing things that are incredible. Yeah. So that is a person.
Yeah, that'd be very cool. And it shows there isn't just one way of doing something. That would be very cool.
Yeah.
And if you could meet somebody, you give the opportunity to sit down and meet somebody, who would you like to meet?
Yeah, I will be boring and I will say the same person because I would ask him all these questions. Where does he get the inspiration from? How does he find all these people to create these incredible things? Like I admire people who can think out of the box and just not be in the same lane as everybody else. So those are the people I would like to meet and get inspiration
from. And as a result of that, you stand out. You know, those super creative people are the people we're drawn to.
I try to. But it's a little bit my personality, having this Greek mother and this father, Hungarian father. I guess I'm all and nothing.
Absolutely. Christina, thank you for your time today. It's been wonderful. Yeah, it's been really, really enjoyable catching up again. And
thank you.
You have a great story, and I don't doubt it's gonna help lots of dentists. I think your honesty of what you've been through will probably perhaps prick the conscience of some dentists, and they might just think about how they're doing. And I'd encourage people to reach out, speak to a friend, speak to a partner, family member, whoever it might be, whoever it is you need to speak to. But like I say, the world can be a lonely place.
Yeah, don't not tell anyone.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you're never alone.
Exactly.
You're never alone, and life is too short to not have fun.
Absolutely. on that note, we'll leave you to it, Christine. Thank you for your time today, and hope to see you soon.
Yeah, cheers, thank Christina.
Thank you so much for inviting me. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.